We'll lead with ways to take aim at the money behind ISIS insurgents in Iraq and Syria. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. With President Obama's primetime address about national security tonight ahead of the September 11th anniversary, U.S. officials are looking at ways to curb the power of ISIS insurgents by cracking down on flows of cash. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore is here live.
Hi, David. So one of the things that makes ISIS such a threat is that it has its own internal funding stream. It used to be that it was getting most of its money from donors, especially in the Gulf states. But Qatar and Kuwait and the U.S. have cracked down on those donors. But the fact is, ISIS is operating like a state now. It's taken millions of dollars from central banks in the regions it's taken over. It charges taxes. It extorts money from businesses, from farms. It controls a half dozen oil fields. It sells oil.
And how might the U.S. fight this?
Well, a lot of it will depend on clamping down on borders. You know, to sell oil, you have to smuggle it. So there's got to be some pressure we're going to be seeing on Turkey and Kurdistan to stop the flow of oil, which, frankly, is hard to do given the porosity of those borders. I personally wonder if we'll see airstrikes on some makeshift refineries that have popped up. We'll see some more attempts to squeeze out donors. But ultimately, to get at this sort of frontier cash economy that's supporting ISIS, you're going to have to release ISIS grip on the territory. It's going to be dependent on militarily defeating them.
Marketplace's Sabri Benishore live. Thank you very much. The internet has killed news, but it also gives news life. The Financial Times is reporting today that Politico, the successful online site for political junkies, is moving beyond its roots in Washington and will eventually come out with a new European edition. Politico is going in half seas with the German media company Axel Springer, which publishes Die Welt and Bild, with bureaus planned for Brussels, London, Paris, Berlin, and beyond. American small businesses are often cast as the engines of the U.S. economy, and there's new data this week showing that optimism among the people who run smaller enterprises has hit a post-recession high. This is from the National Federation of Independent Business, drawn from surveys in August. But what about hiring at these small businesses? Not so much optimism there, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
I've checked in with Harold Jackson periodically in the last few years. His family-owned medical supply company outside Denver has about 20 employees. Jackson gave me the perfect headline for small business sentiment right now.
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic. We're not going to have the kind of growth that we had if you go back 7 years ago, but it's just going to be a slow, prodding, long process.
Jackson hired a few more people earlier this year, but now, also consistent with the NFIB survey, he's holding tight on hiring to see if business gets better. Economist Robert Lighton at the Brookings Institution says there are geopolitical reasons to think it might not.
The headlines are scary, and I think it is somewhat surprising and perplexing that the economy continues to chug along. But then consumers, like businesses, maybe just discounting it and saying, well, these are problems in faraway places.
Lighton says local businesses may see more of a slowdown if world tensions keep rising. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
When a company moves to lower its U.S. tax bill through a controversial maneuver called an inversion, this can become a kitchen table issue. To explain, let's bring in Marketplace regular Alan Sloan, who is senior editor-at-large at Fortune magazine and has been on this inversions beat. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, David.
Setting aside the right versus wrong of these so-called tax inversions of an American company moving its tax home overseas, let's talk about tax planning for investors. If you own a stock in a company that inverts, something happens to you?
Right. If you own it in a non-retirement account, you're treated as if you had sold the stock the day the company inverts.
Now, you've been doing some numbers. You picked the Midwest, where a local company with a strong brand, Medtronic, is doing a tax inversion. And what'd you find?
If you're a Minnesota person and you bought the stock 20 years ago when it traded at today's equivalent of 5, and the company inverted today, you would owe, assuming you're in the top bracket, you would owe roughly $20 a share to the federal government and the state of Minnesota.
I suppose what the company would say is yes, but our plans will mean the stock will go up in the future, will be a more profitable company. If you just wait, you make your money back.
That is, in fact, what the company says.
What about the executives who work at the company? I mean, they tend to have a lot of the stock in their own company. Won't this hit them as well?
The top executives and directors of a company typically have most of their stock in the form of options and what they call restricted shares. Under a special rule that was designed to stop inversions, these people are supposed to pay tax on their restricted stock and their options. However, the people who wrote this law forgot to forbid the companies from making up the cost of the tax. Medtronic estimates it's going to shell out $63 million to compensate its executives for the tax because the company is inverting.
Which is a pretty good deal for those executives involved, but where does that money come from if you're going to compensate the directors?
Well, it comes from the shareholders.
All right. So inversions, tax planning. Alan Sloan, Senior Editor at Large, Fortune. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
The other day, Marketplace talked to a 95-year-old investor who would face just this kind of tax bill. If you missed it on the air, search inversions tax bill Marketplace in New York. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.